Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. It's an illness-plagued edition here. I, myself, am getting over a cold, and Mac is coming down with something exotic and menacing, so bear with us. Eric, I don't know if you've got any colds or illnesses befalling you right now.
I got over something. I'm still coughing my lungs up every now and then. So I was going to hit the mute button, but maybe just for solidarity, I'll sit down. Solidarity, you know.
Nice. That's right. It'll be an FSU convention. But yeah, so it's the Friday Filibuster. I am Judge David Johnson, joined by Judge Mac McIntyre.
Hi there.
And Judge Eric Astroslager.
Here I am.
And you know how this works. We're on episode 201, right, Mac?
That's right.
That's right. So I mean, that's not terribly special, but, you know, hey, we're proud of it. So we'll get right into it, I guess. Eric, why don't you kick us off? Anything to report? Any old news, perhaps? It's been a while.
Anything old? Well, not really. Well, no new movies anyway. I guess something I can talk about that I think you've touched on a while ago, and it's been out both on TV and DVD for a while. But we're almost caught up with the fourth season of Mad Men. Now we've got like one episode left. So I'll briefly say that I know that you weren't terribly.
Yeah, I had some mixed reactions to it, I suppose.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. It's getting better as it nears the end, but the first half of the season is just a real downer.
It seems like, you know what I was really upset with the most? Like the season finale, the third season was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And then the fourth season opens up and it's like fast forwarded through all like the stuff I wanted to see, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we left them in the third season, they're working out of a hotel suite. And then when the fourth season opens up, they're in an office and like Draper's getting interviewed by the New York, like a New York newspaper, right? Or a magazine or something. I love those with the workings of the advertising world. Because, you know, I thought that was cool. So that seemed to get a short shrift in this season too.
Yeah, it definitely seems like, you know, they have to start over in a lot of ways because they've, you know, thrown so much out at the end of the third season. And you know, so much is in flux, and it's a show that moves pretty slowly anyway. It relies a lot on the character stuff just kind of building. So when you have, you know, Don just basically struggling with alcoholism, you know, depression over the divorce and stuff, it just kind of, you know, takes its toll. As it gets closer to the end and he starts to pull himself together and some other things happen, it's getting, you know, better than it was. It definitely didn't have the hold over us that the first few seasons did. I mean, we've been perfectly content waiting for the next Netflix disc to arrive and kind of spreading it out over a week. It's not like, oh, we have to see what happens next.
It's not a Veronica Mars experience for you, right?
No, not at all.
What was the last show that you just tore through? Because you were, was it Sons of Anarchy? Was that the last one?
Yeah, probably. I've been moving at a pretty brisk pace with Buffy too, but Sons was the one that I think made me sick the last time just because I was staying up to like 1 o'clock in the morning like for days on end because I couldn't stop. But yeah, it's great when that happens, and it's awesome that there's so many TV shows that I missed on that are all available through the computer. But
well, if it's Buffy, I would certainly recommend. I've talked about this ad nauseum, but Angel is probably my all time favorite show.
Yeah, and I definitely want to watch that after I finish.
Yes, I think you'll like that.
I don't think I could jump straight to that.
Yeah, you're a Buffy guy, Mac, right? More than an Angel guy, right?
Yeah. Oh, I like them both. Yeah. Angel's a great series, man.
It is. It really was. Oh. Like, the fifth season is one of the most creative seasons of television I've ever seen in my life, you know, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, so. Totally. Yeah, so I definitely enjoy them both.
Yeah. They're very different shows, you know? So
a lot of ways, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm enjoying that, you know, as much as has been spoiled about the series for me just by listening and being on this podcast. Yeah, well, it happens. I'm being kind of constantly surprised by things that I either forgot has been spoiled for me or I just kind of didn't see coming.
Now, what season are you in right now?
I'm kind of three quarters of the way through season two. So not, you know, not terrible.
Well, season two stands as one of my all-time favorite seasons of television ever, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of the definitive Buffy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, season two is, I mean, three quarters of the way, so it's very Angel-centric and all that. So, I mean, to me, like, I mean, I would argue that's where that show really kind of reached a new next level, don't you think, Mac?
Yeah, or more like it, I would say that's when it really found its voice.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It was good from the start, but that's what they really took it to a new height in season two, and it kind of, found its voice.
That's not
like it with my throat.
I just say there's not a lot of fun that awaits you.
Oh, no. Okay, well.
Just a little bit.
Maybe I should just stop. Well, quit while I'm ahead. they definitely, are doing some cool stuff, so. And the only other thing that we haven't touched on in a bit, we can talk very, very briefly about Justified, the season.
That's coming up.
Just about to start as we record this.
Yeah, I'm caught up completely now. For some reason, I'm locked out of On Demand now from Comcast, so I've just been buying the episodes for $2 from Amazon. So we're completely caught up. So, yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, it's been a pretty they've really ratcheted up, and we've talked about it before. But, I mean, this kind of just builds on the crazy stuff of the first season. And I can't say that I'm thrilled with the way everything has gone and all the
– I'm not completely enamored with Boyd's storyline right now. I don't know.
No, me neither. I mean
it seemed kind of sudden. It seemed kind of dramatic.
Yes.
It was very much kind of like he was soul-searching in the beginning, kind of lost, And then maybe it was the last episode. Last episode maybe.
It was a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, where it was just – He just made this 180, and I don't know. I mean, I still love Boyd, but I just think I'm not sure if this is the direction I'd like to see him in.
Yeah, I mean, the show does such a great job of kind of establishing character and stuff. It surprised me that they didn't provide more of a justification for his change.
Yes,
I mean, I guess you got kind of some seeds of it, but it just sort of kind of happened abruptly. I also wasn't overly thrilled that they kind of ended the whole kind of Black Pike thing. I mean, I know they're still going on, but that seemed like you got to that that kind of house party, and that was sort of the end of it, and that was, a few episodes back now, so that was, not nowhere to the end.
And it was a bummer because, what's her name, the woman who was in charge, I thought she was a great character, and she had actual chemistry with the race
Definitely.
Versus Winona, who's kind of a lunkhead, so it's hard to get on board. Didn't it seem like they were pointing that direction? Maybe they'll kind of realize that in the finale. But didn't it kind of seem like they were flirting with the idea of Raylan maybe drifting away from Winona and perhaps being intrigued by this other woman? I don't know.
Yeah, I think they did flirt with it, but I think at this point I don't quite see how they go back to it.
Yeah,
in the finale. I mean, maybe they set something up for next season, but without getting spoilery here, but without saying too much, it sort of seemed like the way that they've taken the Raylan Winona storyline, there's only a few ways that it can go at this point.
Yeah, and it's Happily Ever After doesn't seem like this show's calling.
No,
so.
I think any time you get the main character of a show that's in a specific setting talking about leaving that setting, to be with someone, it kind of raises some red flags.
Yeah, all right. And the upside at least is the Mags and the Bennett stuff is still really good, and they're certainly setting up for some kind of badass confrontation.
Yeah,
finale. I think, and like Dickie is a great character, and
absolutely.
I loved his character, especially when Raylan kind of confronted him in the woods. And
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's going to be an explosive finale. Whatever happens, wherever everything kind of settles down, and it's still a great show. So
definitely,
it's nice to have a show. I mean, there was a while there where we were talking about some series that we were all watching every week.
Lost and
and even 24, even if for morbid curiosity, But Justified has sort of become that sort of must-see show, at least for us right now.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And, again, my thing with Boyd is that I prefer him. I know that, he's a winning character no matter whether he's an antagonist or this anti-hero. But when he does alliances with Raylan, to me that's that's really compelling, even if they're tenuous, the season finale of – season one I thought was just great. So
yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
We'll see what happens, but it certainly is It's that, and I know I've talked about this, and I'll probably get into this when it's my turn. But it's, actually, are you done, Eric?
Go for it.
I'll segue. Mac, I'll let you wrap this up. I'll segue. You know, I've said that Justified and Fringe kind of swap between my favorite shows, and Fringe really had a huge, you know, cliffhanger. And I know it's J.J. Abrams doesn't write this stuff, but certainly it feels like a J.J. Abrams cliffhanger leading up to the season finale. And that's, you know, that's been fantastic as well. And good, it's been picked up for a third season, which is great too. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it's another 22 episodes, even though I know the ratings are kind of soft, but I think they got a pretty strong built-in following. So, but this last episode ended on a major, like a time shifting, one of those time jumps, you know? So those are always, and you know, it's talking about alternate universes, and they're really getting, the mythology is really getting pretty crazy, but they managed to keep it in front of them so it doesn't become lost or, not the show lost, it doesn't feel like you're lost or it's contrived or anything. So so I've been loving that show a lot. What else? I just had a thought. Well, I guess a shout out in a couple of weeks is the Smallville series finale, and we've been watching Smallville since I reviewed that season 8 and kind of got into it. Mac, another comic book guy, any curiosity in just tuning in to the series finale?
Knowing that the show's the big finale is coming up, I've started watching Smallville again just in the last couple of weeks.
Really? What did you start with? What season?
What season? I mean, I'm talking like, you know, 4 weeks ago.
I know. Did you start with a certain season? You're tuning into the broadcast? Is that what you're saying? You're watching the broadcast? Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched the first three seasons, and then I just, my interest kind of tapered off because it got kind of silly.
Right.
And but it stayed on the air, and producers changed, and people kept saying that it got really badass. So, and now it's wrapping up for the end, so I decided I'm going to tune into the end. Man, there are so many DC Comics characters on the show. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard of. Like, is Booster Gold a real DC comic character?
Oh yeah, yeah, he's got a huge cult following, and Blue Beetle too. Yeah, that's the one I turned on. It was Booster Gold was fighting Blue Beetle, and I'm like, oh man, this is the geekiest, nerdiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
And it was a halfway decent episode too. It was
really good, and
they everyone except Batman and Wonder Woman. I mean, they like Hawkman, you know, and.
Oh, Hawkman was on it?
Hawkman was in the Justice Society episode. Yeah, they really, you know, Aquaman showed up here and there, and I was Arrow was still a big part. But yeah, they and you know, Darkseid is the villain. It'll be interesting to see because he's really hasn't been in the forefront at all. So I don't know if they're saving him for the end, but just kind of referencing him. So it'll be see. I mean, Smallville doesn't have a great track record for badass fight scenes at the end. Like in season 8, I believe, is when he fought Doomsday, and it was terrible. It was like 10 seconds of crappy CGI and awful because it was all build up. But last year, there was a good square off with Zod, which was nice. And if you saw last week's episode, that was the Zod-centric one. So
yeah, I did see that. That one was a little confusing for someone coming in late. But
yeah, I would have thought so too. But at least they gave you the shout out to the Phantom Zone mirror, right?
That's right. That was sweet.
Yeah, so. But yeah, it's been cool, and they've been working on the Clark Kent persona, so you'll probably see that some next week too. So, but we're really excited about it.
The big question about Smallville is in the finale: will he wear the suit?
He's got to. I mean, they already kind of referenced in the beginning of the season. Like right now, it's being stored in some ice closet up in the Fortress of Solitude, and they've seen it. You know, so you've seen it, and yeah, he's suiting up for sure. But yeah, I'm excited for it, actually. So we'll see. All right, Mac, I'll let you segue into what you've been up to.
Okay, well, I know there's a lot of big movies coming out. I'm sweating with excitement over Thor coming out this weekend.
Good word of mouth, huh?
Yeah. But actually, there's another movie coming out that I don't know if a lot of people have heard of, but it's getting a lot of word of mouth. Maybe you guys have heard of this. It's called The Clock.
I have not.
Me neither.
Okay, this is a little different. It's been... But it's been a huge success, and it's really been following. It's called The Clock. This movie is 24 hours long.
Oh, brother.
Okay. And the whole thing is made up of clips of other movies in which, you know, clocks or watches or any kind of timekeeping device is seen. And it's in real time. So, and the movie plays in real time based on the time that – it begins. So like,
so they boy, they pull images of clocks that show the time
right
that it supposedly happened.
And, yes, and edit them together. So when you're in the movie theater and it's 2 o'clock, you're watching a clip from a movie in which there's a clock that says 2 o'clock.
Wow.
And then when it's 2:01, it cuts to a different clip from a different movie where you can see a clock like in the background. Someone says 2:01. Then at 2:02, and so on for 24 hours.
Sounds great.
It sounds like someone discovered YouTube and said, I can break that.
So, and this thing, it's been selling out. People have been just lining up like all around the block, hoping to get in to see this. The London Daily Telegraph called it a masterpiece. The New York Times called it the greatest movie ever made and the ultimate work of appropriation art. How I learned about this, it's coming to Boston. The Boston Museum of Fine Arts has paid the director $250,000 for the rights to show the clock for one night only later this year.
Are you going to try to get in there?
I don't know. I don't know if I
That's
can.
That's a commitment right there. That's a commitment.
Well, so, it's certainly different, that's for sure. I don't know how it'll match up against Thor, but...
I have two questions. One, how many showings do they do a day? The answer is one, right?
That's
two, is that, how much would a ticket cost? I mean, is this like the best value in the world, or are the tickets cost like $200?
That's a good question. There was an article about it in the Globe. I don't think it said how much tickets are. So
I guess the nice thing about it is if you go out to get more popcorn, you come back, you don't have to say, what did I miss?
Right.
Because, I missed, 207 to 208 or whatever.
So, it sounds to me like that's a perfect scenario for a homeless person. Right? Yes. Yes. Pony up the money and you have like 24 hours of, indoor air conditioned living. Oh, man. All right. Well.
Plus, if you don't have a clock.
That's right. You'll know exactly. Yeah.
That's right. Well, that's what they're saying. It's like watch. It's an actual living clock that plays out on the screen in front of you.
Thanks. All right.
And a lot of the clips are from famous movies. You see a lot of famous actors in it. So I guess that's another draw. But it's certainly like no other movie I've ever heard of before.
So the next step is to sell the clock, which is a clock that shows the movie, so you use that to tell time.
So the DVD set is like a giant grandfather clock or something.
Yeah. Or you get it like on your phone and on your watch.
Exactly. A watch that shows a clock watch that shows the clock. There's some marketing here.
Speaking of watches, did you guys ever have those video game watches when they were big in the 90s or 80s or whatever?
Was it like flipped open or whatever?
No, they were like they had like the little LCD, the proto LCD. Like I played Double Dragon on my watch. Does that ring a bell to you guys? You know where that?
Sort of.
I had a lot of LCD games, but I never had one on a watch.
Yeah, watches. Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you, they were. I have a distinct memory. I think I may have played Street Fighter 2 as well. I do have a memory of playing Street Fighter 2 on a watch. Huh. Video game watches. All right. Anything else, Mac? Before I start Googling video game watches and probably lose
just
you guys.
Obsessed with this clock movie. So.
Yeah, that's so. Well, there's definitely obsession involved in it. all right, what we've been working on. Eric, why don't you go first?
So this week I'm reviewing Royal Pains Season 2. This is the USA Network show.
Right. Now, let me ask you, USA or FX, what does the Asher Slager household enjoy the most? What is the official basic cable station the Asher Slager household
does? Well, for me, it would be FX. For the duo of my wife and I guess it would probably be USA. Although
that makes sense.
Although, I mean, we've sort of narrowed down what we watch. I mean, we watch Psych, we watch White Collar. We watch Royal Pains, although I enjoyed the first season. Not crazy about the second. It's kind of the USA Network shows are very breezy, I would say.
Right. That's good.
They're kind of lightweight. And this is sort of the lightest weight of their shows. There are other shows like Psych, like I said, Psych and Monk and White Collar and Burn Notice. There's like there's some sort of mystery to be solved. There's some sort of case. They're very kind of procedural, even though there's a lot of humor and character stuff. Royal Pains, which is about a concierge doctor in the Hamptons, is a little more soap opera-y, a little more on the kind of light humorous side. There's always some sort of medical crisis that hits, but they tend to be both outlandish and similar. Like, someone always collapses. Like, whenever there's like, you know that the medical crisis has begun because someone just falls over.
Ah, yes.
And then of course, he has to figure out what obscure, you know, disease they contracted from licking an envelope at the wrong – I don't know. It's just it's kind of crazy. So that's not really the draw of the show for me. It's more kind of the characters, and they became less interesting in the second season, unfortunately. But so I'm reviewing that now. It's a show that, you know, my wife still likes, and we do watch, but it's one that I tend to try to find other things on the DVR before I, you know, say let's watch Royal Pains. But
gotcha.
But you know, I think there's definitely an audience for it if you don't like procedurals, but you like the USA style, then it's, you know, it's pretty good.
All right, nice. Mac.
Well, I got something I didn't enjoy very much, I'm afraid.
Oh.
And I suppose I should warn our listeners that this next segment of the show is going to be the adults only part of the show.
Okay. Nice.
Because the name of the show, it's a TV series. It was 13 episodes, and it's called Testies.
Now, wait a minute. Was that like a Showtime show or something?
I believe it was on FX.
FX, really?
Yeah. And it's just god-awful. It's a comedy. It's the setup couldn't be simpler. It's two guys volunteer for scientific testing in order to make some money. And that just leads to, you know, just a whole bunch of every, like, gross-out joke and bodily function humor that the writers could think of. And that's your whole show right there, basically.
Sounds awesome.
It's like I said in the review, if Family Guy is too intellectual and sophisticated for you, then this is the show for you.
Yikes. Yeah, man. Talking about people maybe crawling out of the prehistoric muck and watching this, then.
Exactly.
Yikes. All right, so no go on Testies. Anything else?
That's it for this week, yeah. Hopefully right. I'll get something that I can actually enjoy next week.
So you had a batch of kid-friendly stuff, like Elmo's Travel Songs and Dora's Haircut and Max and Ruby's Rainy Play Day.
Dora's Haircut?
Yeah, Dora's first haircut.
How is that exploring, exactly?
So I don't know. That's pretty – the only thing – you know, I'm not a fan of Dora, but the only thing that's you know, that's memorable is that as I noted in my review, the over-exuberant barber looks like he was in the band Menudo at one point. So, there's another oddball movie. Well, not oddball. I mean, it's a decent movie. It's called The Trench and stars Daniel Craig. And it takes place in World War One, and it's kind of oddish. So it's like a 90-minute, you know, regular 95-minute movie. And really all it does is take place in this trench. And it could be like a play, you know, like an off-Broadway play. Where you always see one sentence, trench. So, and basically these guys are just kind of talking and sharing their fears. So you get to know these guys, but the rub is, we know right away that the battle is like the bloodiest slaughter ever the British military endured. So, like, you know all these guys are getting wiped out. So, like, you know, you know the depression, you know it's coming. So do you invest in these stories or not? I just opted not to because sure enough, they got wiped out at the end. So, I don't know. It was kind of an interesting. It wasn't bad, but it was a little tedious, and it was tough to get into these guys' lives because you knew that pain and gory death awaited them. On the flip side, the DVD looks like it was entered like a time slipstream from 1995.
Really?
I mean, just those static menus, you know, like those just. It's difficult to explain, but these crappy menus. I think like. Scene selection was highlighted as one of the extras on the back of the DVD.
Oh, of
you know, so terrible transfer, terrible audio. So I didn't really give a whole lot of thought to The Trench. So yeah, there you go. And that's it. That's all of worth. So Mac, why don't you take us to part three or two or wherever we're doing? Yeah, three,
sure.
Two,
whatever. We're gonna take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to DVDverdict.com. Click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there go to the cover art gallery for May 10th. And we're just going to talk about what's on the list that's interesting.
Oh, Almighty Thor.
Yes.
What do we got here?
That would be the folks from the Asylum.
Yes.
Yes, there's nothing they won't rip off. Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Nash, huh?
Oh, really?
Oh, boy.
They've also got this sort of standalone releases for the at least the first two Alien movies.
That's right.
Came out in the set.
Right, on Blu-ray.
Yeah, on Blu-ray. On Blu-ray, yeah.
A movie that I'm interested in taking a look at, Black Death. Though I don't know if that's like, is that an R region release? I'm not sure. Starring Sean Bean.
Looks like it's from Magnolia.
Yeah, it's a magnet. It's one of those Magnolia films. So supposedly pretty interesting. Kind of like this horror period piece, you know, about the plague. And hey, Sean Bean with a sword, I'm down with. So
that's right.
Hey, Chopkick Panda, come on!
That's great.
It's just shameless now, isn't it?
And they start with fake fan art for these covers. Someone mocks up a fake cover and they just go from there.
Man, there's like a Tiger Warrior in it too. Like, isn't there a Tiger Warrior in Kung Fu Panda?
Yeah, that's like the villain, right? Was the tiger?
Yeah, straight up knockoff. Oh, Dahmer versus Gacy. Who was that? Like Alien versus Predator? What is going on this week? Yay! What else?
You know, as exciting as it is to have all this, you know, high def technology, I have to wonder about some of these Blu-ray releases. Was there really a big demand for Straight Talk with Shelley Long in high def?
I wonder if you're going to go with the V.I. Warshawski.
That one as well.
How about My Father the Hero?
Oh, man.
Gerard Depardieu. When's the last time anyone's heard from that guy?
Oh, no, wait. The girl in that, she's like became somebody famous, right?
Oh, I don't know. What was she in?
Now I got to look it up. Let's see.
Katherine Heigl.
Yes, that's
right. Oh, wow. It's true. She was someone famous.
She was. That's right. And there's The Trench. Right next to Superstorm.
And Daniel Craig looks really ticked off in that cover. And we got seasons 1 through 5 in a box set of Supernatural.
Nice. I think that's just regular DVD, right? I'm obviously a big fan of that show. Still enjoying it, too.
Now, there's this movie here called Sledgehammer. It's not the cult classic 80s.
Right. I think that was on a release list. Yeah, that was on a release list, I thought.
Now, allegedly, if the stories are true, this movie claims to be the first ever direct-to-video movie. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's claim to fame.
That's something. I guess that's something, right?
And think of all the solid entertainment that followed in its path. Stuff like Almighty Thor from the Asylum.
What else? I don't know.
We got some more Doctor Who releases from the third Doctor, including Planet of the Spiders.
Is it true that if you stacked up all the Doctor Who DVD releases, they'd reach the moon?
It could be.
Is that the rumor?
You'd fill up the TARDIS with them. But no, Planet of the Spiders is great. It's one of the all-time best ones of any Doctor.
Here's some Brave Star. I reviewed these DVDs a long time ago.
Yeah, you know, as much as I love the old cartoons, I could never get into Brave Star.
I don't know. That is horse. That's, I don't know. Horses should never be anthropomorphic, I don't think. Yeah, they just don't lend themselves to that. They just look weird.
I mean, can you think of any other anthropomorphic horses?
I can't. Like, that walk on two legs and hold guns and stuff?
I guess not. Mr. Ed never carried firearms.
No, Mr. Ed doesn't count.
Well, there's the one
he just talked, yeah, but he wasn't like, you know, sitting in the Barca Lounger, you know, with Wilbur.
Well, there's one in Tangled, but he was pretty cool.
Ooh, that's something I want to see, actually. Dinosaurs, Extreme Survivors. Huh. Not from the footage I've seen.
Extreme Survivors of the Ice Age?
Yeah, apparently not. Ooh, how about this AD 2012 movie? You see this? Let me see. Document not found. So maybe. Mysterious. All right. Well, feel free to peruse and purchase and support DVD Verdict with your purchases. So, inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Eric.
Happy Husbands.
That's like the most wholesome one.
Keeping Score.
Very good. We'll go with One Night in Turin. Assuming Turin is an adult film star of reputable. All right, now let's move on to our average topic segments, and you know how these work. We just throw random topics at each other and see what sticks. I'll go first. Inspired by the huge recent news of the Navy SEALs and the Osama bin Laden compound attack.
What's this now?
Yeah, did you hear about it? Some big stuff happened. So crack teams who undertake missions, yet, and here's the twist, because they fail at them. Obviously, our badass Navy SEAL guys did fail in their mission, but crack teams undertake tough missions, yet ultimately fail. And you can be very flexible with the but crack team.
Now, did I'm not really familiar with A-Team Cannon, but did they end up in jail because of some sort of
They were framed for a crime they didn't commit.
I know, but was that crime like a mission that they were on, or am I just do we not know that?
That's probably correct. I don't know. I'm sure they explained it. I don't know the specific ins and outs though.
Okay. Well, then I guess that only half counts.
Half counts. Something
not
else.
A lot of continuity.
But we'll accept it. We'll accept it.
I'll try to think of another half while you guys are.
All right.
Let's see. On Star Trek Deep Space Nine, they introduced us in one episode to Red Squad. They were the cadets at Starfleet Academy who were like the absolute best. And they were the top dogs, and they were the guys that no one else could touch.
Yeah.
And they tried to take on, I think it was a Klingon ship. Remember it in Jem'Hadar, but I think it was a Klingon ship. And there was a huge battle, and they thought they had destroyed the Klingons because there was this big explosion. And then the Klingon ship came, like, flying out of the explosion and, like, kicked all their asses.
So. The red shirts, is that the last you ever saw the red? So was it like a joke because they're all red shirts?
Oh, that could be. Maybe it was like an inside joke. You know, that never occurred to me until now. But mostly, it's just kind of... There are all these just sort of whiny punk kids who thought they were tough guys, and that the Klingons showed them who the real tough guys are.
Nice. Speaking of which, real quick, Mac, what do you want to see out of Klingons from the next Star Trek movie?
Oh, that's a tough one. You watch the deleted scenes in the last one, the J.J. Abrams one. And they really tiptoed around what the Klingons are going to look like. So, I don't know. I just want to seem to be for many years, Klingons were a metaphor for the Soviet Union, First they were the evil empire. Then they were like the fallen empire.
Yes.
And so I don't know if we want to keep that metaphor going. And
Hey, they just sit on the Security Council, the Federation veto stuff?
I guess. I don't know.
Build giant pipelines? I don't know.
They have their Olympics team is still pretty good.
That's true.
I don't want to see them be weak. I want to see them be really strong, really tough. To see them be a formidable force.
And they should be, right? In the timeline, right?
There's been too many times in Star Trek history where they were shown to be like weaker than other guys, and I never really liked that. I want to see them be really like, fearsome.
Nice.
It's like when a Klingon walks in the room, everyone that jolts would be like, "Oh my god, it's a Klingon."
All right. Let's see. For me, I'm going to – unless Eric, I don't know if you came up with a second half.
I guess I got a second half.
What do you got?
This is from Buffy Season 2, the Order of Taraka, the vampire bounty hunters who end up all getting wasted.
Yes. That was one of my all-time favorite Buffy villains was the worm guy.
Yeah, the worm guy was good. See, isn't this great? It's like I'm back in 1997.
That's great. Hey, you can be watching that Trench DVD.
I am.
Let's see. For me, I'm going to go with that elite SEAL squad sent into to Alcatraz and the Rock, led by Michael Biehn, They get promptly wiped out in the shower room, leaving only an old and decrepit Sean Connery and like a bipolar Nicolas Cage. So, which is unfortunate. He could probably use a little help from those SEAL guys, but they just got totally massacred. So, unfortunate.
I got one more. Then.
Yeah.
Beginning of Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
All those guys.
That's true.
All those Marines I kind of hated getting wiped out, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
They kept yelling, Wiz Bearsky.
Uh-huh. You didn't like those Marines and Aliens?
No, it's like the first like half hour of that movie is just like dumb macho slang, like cliche stuff. It's just, I kind of hate the beginning of Aliens.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't like you know.
You going against the grain.
I know. I don't like whatever. Drop your linen and start your grinning.
That's great. going after Hicks, right?
Yeah, I hate all that stuff. Yeah, no. Bill Paxton's terrible.
Oh man!
Wow, Bill Paxton is terrible in Aliens. Oh man, that's gonna get like pitchforks and.
Yeah, man, you just broke the internet.
Microsoft Sidewinder wheel geeks at your door.
Bring it on, internet geeks. if you need to burn me an effigy on objection, feel free.
As we all know, Bill Paxton was the only character to ever be killed by a Terminator, Predator, and Alien.
That's right.
Then he must have deserved it.
But he deserved it. Okay, Eric, why don't you go next?
Okay, my topic is a high jump into water. jumping from a great height. Jumping or falling from a great height into water.
That's a good one. Okay, again, a movie I've talked about at great length that I deeply love, Apocalypto. There's a scene where our hero, Jaguar Paw, is running to elude the Mayans who are after him. And he gets to a gigantic waterfall and takes a leap and he thinks he's safe. And then all those guys jump in after him. And it's all beautiful to look at, except the one guy lands headfirst on a boulder. So, and pretty tough way to go in typical Mel Gibson movie-making fashion. So, yeah, great. But there's a lot of these. I'm thinking of them.
I know. Well, the most famous has to be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yes.
That's the one that the clip they always show. No special effects there, just two stuntmen going for it.
Nice.
But you mentioned The Rock. I'll go with Face Off and Nicolas Cage's escape from the jail.
Yeah, good. Jumping off the oil rig.
Yeah, that's right.
That's good.
Yeah. And then how far did he have to swim to get back?
I don't know. It just kind of cut. Yeah. It's like he jumped in, cut, and he's at a payphone booth. So.
Probably a lot of these movies have these jumps into water.
Do you hitch the ride on a magic dolphin? You know, I thought one of my, an iconic one for me was Last of the Mohicans. You remember that one?
Oh, of course, yeah. After he gives his big speech, right?
I will find you. Yeah. And then he takes a leap. So
yeah, there are lots. Butch Cassidy came to mind, obviously. I'll go with The Fugitive.
Oh, excellent.
He jumps out of the pipe, you know.
Yeah. That one's a tough one to survive, I would think. That was a long fall.
It seems unlikely.
Yeah. But he did survive a train accident, so
that's true.
Possible.
That was famously spoofed on The Simpsons, too, with Milhouse after he hits the bottom.
Oh, right.
My glasses.
That's probably a whole separate topic, but that was a movie that I went to see with my dad. I knew nothing about it at all. Just went to see it and thought it was awesome. I mean, it was like 92 or something, so I think it was in high school, but... you know, movies you like didn't know anything about going in, and ended up being really impressive.
Nice.
I don't know. I'm not. It's not a double ambush. If you want to answer it, you can. It's just something to think about.
Movies that you went in not knowing anything about and loved. LA Confidential. LA Confidential.
Oh, really? You didn't know anything about that?
Didn't know anything about it, and just still one of my all-time favorites. Yeah, that's great. That's tough these days to even find a movie like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Forrest Gump was a movie. I didn't know anything about it at all.
Really?
I just went with a bunch of people who happened to go, and it was like, oh, wow, that was cool. I don't know if it holds up as much now, but it was pretty cool.
I guess for that one, I'd have to go back to when I was a little kid and E.T.
You didn't know anything about E.T.?
Well, I was awfully little.
Okay.
And, so I didn't really know who Spielberg was. I wasn't familiar with – I knew I was a big Star Wars kid, but I didn't really know Jaws. Maybe I'd seen Close Encounters, but – my parents were kept trying to talk me and go and see this movie, and I thought it was going to be like a horror movie. I thought it was going to be scary, but I really didn't know anything about it. And of course, you know, being a kid, you know, you get just drawn into the story with those kids. So
right.
That would be mine.
For some reason, that's a movie I remember going to see in the theaters like multiple times. I don't know how that happened because we didn't go to the movies much. This is like, you know, early 80s, so I was like, you know, 6 or 7 or something.
Man, I didn't see E.T. until I was a lot older. I did not see it during my formative years.
I remember seeing that. I remember seeing Star Trek II.
Oh,
when I was a kid. And of course the Setai Eel stuff freaked the heck out of me.
I have very faint memories of seeing Return of the Jedi.
Oh yeah.
So when that came out in 83, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean I would have been I was 76.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we're the same age. I remember that. I remember like wanting to see it when it came out. I remember the day it came out, being super excited. I didn't go to see it right away, but I was six. How did I?
I know. I just remember flashes.
How had I seen the other two before that and to see Return of the Jedi? I don't even know.
I just have flashes of memory. I believe I saw it at the Uptown Theater. I don't know if you ever went to the Uptown Theater in Utica. I remember very faint flashes of memory, but I remember when the opening titles occurred and you saw the partially completed Death Star, and I remember like the audible gasps from the audience. And like after that point, I remember nothing. I don't know what happened. No idea. But I also saw, again, this is like, when did the Muppet movie come out?
Original Muppet movie was 78, 79.
79, I think.
Yeah. You can't have seen it when it was first.
I remember seeing it. I think so.
When we were young, they released movies in theaters again. Because I remember seeing Star Wars in the theaters.
I must have seen it.
I didn't see it when I was zero.
I saw it re-released. I'm sure of it. Anyway, because you know where I saw it? A little place called the Stanley Theater. You might have heard of it.
Stanley Theater in Utica, New York. It's the Stanley Theater of Performing Arts.
That's right. So they must have re-shown it for something for sure. So, yeah. Okay. We are really out off track.
Sorry.
Mac, what do you got?
Okay, well, this is we kind of hit on this a little bit, but it's a little abstract, but we can go with it. It's when animals transform into other kinds of animals.
Well, I mean, the obvious one is in Willow.
That's right. I had a feeling you were going
to
go there.
I suppose you wanted to make sure we talked about Willow, but yeah. Good result, Trent, you know, does a lot of transmogrifying or whatever. So she goes from – she's the ferret, right? And then she goes into the crow or the raven. No, crow, I think. And then to a goat. And then from the goat, she transitions into that crazy – you know, the proto-CGI sequence.
Right.
She goes from like a lion to a turtle to a Siberian tiger to all that
crazy. And an ostrich.
And an ostrich, yes. And meanwhile, there's more animal transformations going on outside the tent where all of our human mammals are turning into pigs, if you recall. So, yeah, a lot of animal action in Willow.
Well, this is since we're going kind of loose on this, I'm going to go with Alien 3, when the alien inhabits the dog and becomes sort of a dog alien.
Oh, that's right.
We will count xenomorphs as animals.
Yes.
Right?
Well, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
I don't know what their phylum is.
I think
Kingdom
it's
phylum. I can't remember. It was King Philip came over for great sex. Kingdom.
Or from Germany Stone, whatever worked for you in your high school.
That was the Thomas R. Proctor acronym.
I think their official scientific name is Killalium Bastardium or something like that.
All right, Mac.
In Alien 3, did you ever see the deleted scenes where they actually dressed up a dog and as one of the aliens, and they couldn't use it in the movie because it was too adorable?
I'm just picturing like your basic dog Halloween costume now, which is like it's like a Jack Russell Terrier with like a giant head extending from behind him.
That was pretty much it. Yeah, it's hilarious. But yeah, for mine, the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon, Young Samson, is basically a riff on the whole He-Man thing where the whiny.
But this is like biblical Samson?
Well, loosely based on. He had the whiny little kid who had these two metal armbands. He'd hit his armbands together and then he'd transform into the big muscle man and fight giant robots. And just like He-Man would have that whatever it was that turned into Battle Cat. What was it before it became Battle Cat?
Cringer.
Cringer, yeah.
Yes.
Well, He-Man had Young Samson has a dog, a little puppy named Goliath. And Goliath transforms into a gigantic lion. And this always really bugged me because it crosses that dog-cat cartoon boundary, you know. It's like, seems to me that the dog should transform into a giant wolf, the cat should transform into a giant lion, but you don't cross that dog-cat line in a cartoon. It's just really wrong. Oh, perverse almost.
Sounds like the least of the problems for a show called Young Samson.
Yes.
Which sounds spectacularly dumb. Anything else of note of that show? Does he have long hair and all that stuff?
He has, well, kind of, well, he has longish hair, not
Does
really.
Does he kill, like, 100 Philistines with the jawbone of an ass?
Sadly, that would have been awesome, but no. He just, like, fights giant robots and and he stops forest fires, you know, the usual. So. The kid, he has, like, no parents or anything. He just rides from town to town on his motorcycle and he's a little, you know, one of the...
Okay, it's total, not biblical.
Well, yeah. at least they kept that for the Bible.
That's right.
He's a total goody-goody teenager, and then he transforms into a big muscle man.
I think that's from one of the Gnostic Gospels.
Yeah, this young Delilah never showed up, so that missed opportunity there.
although the way you described that show, I'm like 95% sure I saw it. The whole clanging together of the bracelet sounds familiar.
Oh, man. All right. Well, boy, we've really reached into our subconscious to bring out random memories of young Samson and Return of the Jedi when we were six. What a waste.
I feel chipped.
I feel like, you know, this great, impactful science fiction movie experience that you can actually see in the theaters. And I was picking my nose and eating it probably instead of watching, you know, Wookiee domination. This was
less a podcast and more of a psychiatry session.
It was. Absolutely it was. It was therapeutic.
I'll just lay back on the couches and...
Well, so there you go. That is our podcast. We are done with it. So thank you to Mac and Eric. And Friday Filibuster at dvdverdict.com is our email. Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster. And again, peruse those DVDs and purchase to your heart's content. And really support DVD Verdict so we can continue to offer quality free content. Like these podcasts where we just talk about random memories that you may not care about, but who cares? At least we get to mention the Stanley Theater in Utica, New York. So with that being said, Matt, take us away.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.